It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, hour number two of our radio. And we'll get back to reacting about all the latest with LIV Golf, the PGA Tour, and the DP World Tour agreeing to a business merger to quote-unquote unify golf, a.k.a., in my words, the PGA Tour finally said, yep, we're going to take that Saudi money. I did see, though, two things during the break, Hickey, that made me chuckle. One is in the basketball world and one is in the football world. Which one do you want to hear first? You want to hear a funny headline in the football world or a funny headline in the world of hoops?
Let's go hoops first.
Okay. So our boss, Spike Eskin, he quote tweeted this article from Legion Hoops. Report, James Harden is torn over staying in Philly or moving on to Houston. Let me ask you a question here, and that's via Shams Charania and Ryan Russillo. This is why I think it's funny. What do you think James Harden is actually torn over? If you had to give a legitimate answer, we go to Hot Take Hickey, Mr. Professional, Mr. Sports. What is your sports opinion on why James Harden would be torn in staying in Philly or maybe going back to Houston?
I will say the pressure. High pressurized situation in Philly. You go back home to a team that is a lottery team, a lot less pressure to go, and you can kind of hoop, do what you got to do after the game, and just kind of enjoy the millions you're going to get stress-free.
Now, let me preface this. What I just read you earlier, that wasn't the funny part to me in terms of just the headline, him being torn over staying in Philly or moving to Houston. I think I know the reason what makes this funny. I think it's because the strippers are calling James Harden, right? In Houston, like Shandy or whoever, that one strip club. I don't know why I just threw out the name Shandy. I guess that's the stripper name that I'm going to use of choice right there. Also probably mix it in with Ted Lasso too.
What have you been doing recently?
Well, now there was a girl in Ted Lasso who was very provocative. Her name was Shandy. So I don't know why. That's just what I kind of used as thinking about a stripper name. Maybe it would be Shandy.
Interesting.
Yeah, she wasn't a stripper in the show, but she was very promiscuous, let's just say. But anyway, I think that that's a big part of it. Because you hear when Doc Rivers got fired why James Harden was upset with Doc Rivers. Because he didn't let him kind of be him, and Doc tried to hold him accountable. And Doc wanted a little bit more effort from James Harden, where if you're going out partying, you got to show up the next day and give it your all and not be hung over because you're out late at night at a strip club. But remember, allegedly, James Harden once spent $1 million a night in a strip club. And James Harden has a jersey retired in a Houston strip club. And the Philadelphia strip club scene from experience, from previous experience when I was a college student, and I may or may not have attended a few of those establishments back when I was in college, I don't think that the Philly strip club scene, not bad, but it's definitely not what it is in Houston if James Harden is spending $1 million a night in a Houston strip club. Because if you're spending $1 million a night in a Houston strip club, now you could argue maybe you needed to spend that $1 million to make it a good night. But I would imagine that that would be a pretty good strip club, especially if they're retiring your jersey shortly after that. And I know you may be listening to this and be like, oh, that's the dumbest thing that you've ever heard. But I really do believe, Hickey, the party atmosphere for James Harden is a big one. And the party atmosphere, even though I love Philadelphia and Houston, is better than what it is in Philadelphia for weather just being one of the big reasons. But also, you further look at this, it's not crazy to suggest that partying plays a big role. Remember, James Harden was the same guy that right before, was it the start of the postseason? Or I think it was after the first round. Before that series up against Boston, where he's partying, going out before a playoff series in Las Vegas before he jetted his way back to Boston before he had that great 45-point performance and ended up stealing game one for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Which, for all those geographically challenged, Houston is a lot closer to Vegas than Philly is. So those flights back, if you want to partake in the party scene outside of your backyard in H-Town, a lot easier, a lot quicker of a trip, more time to spend in Vegas in Houston with the Rockets than with the Sixers.
Now, I always mess this up, but I think I finally got it right. that Reddit article or that Reddit thread that was out years ago, it was the cities that had the good strip clubs. Those are the cities that he would perform well in when he was on the road. And the cities with the bad strip clubs, were those the ones that he would perform poorly on when he'd be playing on the road?
I believe so. Let me double check. But I think like Utah, I don't think he played well there. Let me just triple check.
Gotcha.
That for you.
And you would assume, this is just me assuming, I've never been to Utah, that Utah doesn't have the best strip club establishments in the world. And I would imagine, I could be dead wrong here, but I would imagine that Houston has a better strip club scene than Philadelphia. So I think that does play a factor, and that's what I do think, and that's my expert sports opinion.
The opposite. He plays really well in cities that have great strip clubs.
That's what I said. He plays really well in cities that have great strip clubs.
No, sorry. Does not play well.
Oh, does not play well. Gotcha.
Struggles in cities that have great strip clubs. Mm-hmm. Miami, for example, not his best.
Which makes more sense.
Statistically.
Because you're out late and you're not going back to your hotel room earlier. Now, I don't know where Philadelphia ranks in terms of strip clubs. And I know when they did this Reddit post, it was only on the road locations. I don't think they factored in Houston. And I don't know what his home record was like. But I do think for him, it's fair to say if there's that much information out there, strip clubs are a priority. And that actually may be priority number one for him. Do you think he cares more about the strip club or winning basketball games?
Definitely the party scene.
I agree with you. Now, talking about partying, I laughed at this headline from the New York Post. Aaron Rodgers and Sauce Gardner. What do you think they were practicing today at Jets OTAs? Did you see this headline at all? What do you think Aaron Rodgers and Sauce Gardner, who were out of the town in New York, they went to Carbone, they went to a Knicks playoff game, they were seated next to Jessica Alba, who's still unbelievably gorgeous, and we will not deal with any Jessica Alba slander on this show. That hot take Hickey was trying to push a few weeks ago, and that was Hickey's worst take of all time, and people absolutely just torched him, and I shouldn't even let you comment about anything pertaining to Jessica Alba anymore, but I'll let you off the hook here for a second. What do you think Rodgers and Sauce Gardner were practicing today at Jets OTAs?
I'll tell you what I hope they're not practicing, and hopefully I'm right here. I hope they were not doing the Jerry Jones and practicing accepting like Super Bowl MVP and both like jointly holding a fake Lombardi trophy and saying, okay, I'm through, we're going to lift it. 1, 2, 3. And they both lift it up. Please don't tell me that that's what they were doing today.
Now, it's a good guess because Rodgers was at the Taylor Swift concert, and when the confetti was falling at the Taylor Swift concert and he was being a Swiftie, he was like, oh, the Jets win the Super Bowl. But that is incorrect.
Okay.
Do you have another guess here?
What they're and this is at practice, what they're practicing, a handshake.
Yeah, they were practicing a handshake. Now, what is the two words in front of the handshake? It's Aaron Rodgers, Sauce Gardner. This is the headline. Practice blank blank handshake at Jets OTAs.
Blank blank. There's a name for a handshake?
Uh-huh. Something they're doing in the handshake. And they're not just walking up to each other and shaking hands like normal people.
Running, jumping handshake.
Do you think that would be funny?
I don't know.
Aaron Rodgers and Sauce Gardner practice weed smoking handshake at Jets OTAs.
Legal now.
Now, how do they know that they were practicing a weed smoking handshake? There is a photo, and it is Sauce Gardner going like this, looking like he's taking a hit of something, and Aaron Rodgers looking like he's taking a hit of something, and in this case, it's just air. But how is that definitely a joint? How is that maybe definitely a blunt? How do you know that there's weed? That was their intention. Maybe it's just a cigarette or something along those lines.
I hope it's weed. I don't want my star quarterback and my star DB smoking heaters. Come on.
Oh, I don't know. If they're
rather I'm smoking a doobie than smoking some darts.
First off, we don't know what Rodgers like when he gets into that state of mind, number one. Number two, Le'Veon Bell would probably be on board with what you just said. Did you see what Le'Veon Bell said last week?
I did.
Smoked
for every game.
Right before games. No wonder why he was a slow starter and it was a buildup on his running style as well. Le'Veon Bell, one of the slowest but quickest runners. You know, the buildup to Le'Veon Bell accelerating was very slow.
Very patient.
Yes.
He allowed the line. He was in no rush to, you know, open a hole.
Yeah. So that was the headline that I just read during the break. Rodgers and Sauce Gardner practicing weed smoking handshakes at Jet OTA.
Getting ready to smoke that Bills pack for week one.
I wonder what the line is on that game.
Which, but that would actually be a good gimmick, I will say. I don't want my star athlete smoking cigarettes, but after every win, if you're in the locker room smoking the, and then you have the team logo on the pack,
yeah,
it's original.
But
smoking that Bills pack.
Yeah, but I kind of think now a lot of players in the past have obviously smoked cigars or have done celebrations like that. But recently, that's kind of been reserved for the Cincinnati Bengals, it feels like.
Which Joe Burrow a common and saying, Jamar though.
Chase. I know, I understand what you're saying.
Smoking that whatever
Philly
team
pack.
Or
whatever.
Which I like. I like that's a trend.
Okay.
So there you go. Maybe that's what they're doing. They're getting ready to smoke that Bills pack.
Already? Right now? In June?
Well, how can you beat the Bills if you're not practicing to beat them now, you know?
Yeah.
Week one is here faster than you know it.
I got to see what the spread is on that game. My early indication is however many points Buffalo is the favorite, just lay the points with Buffalo.
Hammer the Bills.
Wouldn't that kind of be very media kind of like Rodgers doesn't get blown out but doesn't play all that great, throws a crucial interception, and then the next day it's give us a call on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Should the Jets already regret trading for Aaron Rodgers? That would be very media-like.
And there'd be plenty of fans that say, yes, get him out of here. The love fest is over.
Alrighty, so today the big news, Live Golf PGA Tour and the DP World Tour agree to a business merger to unify golf. Let's take you back to almost a year ago. This is Jay Monahan, one of the guys that helped get this deal done, who's the commissioner of the PGA. He, a year ago, was on CBS Sports with Jim Nantz, and this was his message to golfers choosing to join Live Golf.
Let me ask about this. There was a story that was first reported in the New York Post yesterday by Brian Wacker about a 9/11 coalition of families and survivors of the 2001 terrorist attacks. 9/11 families united sent a letter to the representatives of Phil, Dustin, Bryson, Reed, and others, quote, expressing their outrage towards the golfers for participating in the new league and accusing them of sports washing and betraying the United States, end quote. And that's gotten a lot of steam over the last 24 hours. That story first reported again in the New York Post. How much did you talk to your players about the possible ramifications if they sign on with the new league?
Well, I talked to players. I've talked at a player meeting, and I've talked to a number of players individually for a long period of time. And I think you'd have to be living under a rock to not know that there are significant implications. And as it relates to the families of 9/11, I have two families that are close to me that lost loved ones. And so my heart goes out to them. And I would ask, you know, any player that has left or any player that would ever consider leaving, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour?
So there you go, and you're using the victims' families of 9/11 to benefit yourself a year ago, but now a year later, you're taking that money and showing that everyone does have a price, and you come off as a major hypocrite. Like, if you just take the money from the start, guys like Koepka, guys like Mickelson, guys like Dustin Johnson, I think some people, including at least like Hickey and I, we understood it. But when you tell others not to take it and then eventually take it for your tour, it makes you look like you know what. So this is Jay Monahan today, who says the partnership was made because things, of course, changed.
You've heard me say a couple times, circumstances change. You know, what changed? You know, I looked at where we were at that point in time, and it was the right point in time to have a conversation. And we weren't, you know, Michael, going back to the origin of Liv, you know, they needed to go down their path and we were going to go down ours. We've done everything we can within our control to improve and grow the PGA Tour. And, you know, they've launched Liv, they've proceeded with Liv, they've made progress with Liv. But ultimately it was looking at the broader picture and saying that I don't think it's right or sustainable to have this tension in our sport and to be able to organize and orient this in a way where, again, we're in a control position. We have an investor, a great and world-class investor. And I recognize everything that, you know, that I've said in the past and in my prior positions. I recognize that people are going to call me a hypocrite. And anytime I've said anything, I said it with the information I had at that moment. And I said it based on someone that's trying to compete for the PGA Tour and our players. And so I accept those criticisms.
Don't you kind of just, Hickey, if you're him today, you got, like, you did what you did. You just got to take it on the chin. I don't need that almost 60, 70 second buildup to you basically just admitting, yeah, it's fair to call me a hypocrite today. I feel like we could just save that song and dance and just say, if people want to call me a hypocrite, I understand it. We're going to move forward, and this is where we're at today. Because you know you're really not going to get any truthful answers from Jay Monahan today.
Definitely did not need the, I don't feel it's right to have tension between. Yeah.
Do you hear that? That is the sound of BMW performance without a single piston or cylinder. A generation of all-electric vehicles designed and built like no other. The BMW iX, i7, and i4 revolutionize every drive into a thrilling opportunity to feel the pure rush of BMW 100% electric. But isn't that what you'd expect from the ultimate electric driving machine? Take advantage of exceptional lease and finance offers today.
In these two leagues, I thought it was in the best interest of everyone.
And now the investors are great, too.
Cut that tension, right. And now, all of a sudden, like I said before, they were doing their thing, we're doing our thing, and just pretend like he never criticized the LIV Tour before. It's ridiculous.
I know we got to get to a break, but with the golf tournament going on in Canada coming up in a few days, you had a lot of PGA golfers there. So Jay Monahan had a meeting with the golfers that were there. They all could have elected to go. I read via Amy Rogers, who works for the Golf Channel, that Tommy Fleetwood just passed by the clubhouse opting to skip the player meeting with Jay Monahan. When asked why, he just shrugged his shoulders and said he was practicing his game. I don't know about you, Hickey. Even if I was a golfer today, and I would imagine most golfers that stay on the PGA Tour are irate, I don't understand how you elect to skip the meeting today. Just from a gossip standpoint, just from getting kind of a feel in the room, it is bizarre to me that Tommy Fleetwood was just like, oh, yeah, I just wanted to practice my game. I had no interest of going to the meeting.
I guess I get it because anything Jay Monahan says you're not going to believe seriously.
You want to see who freaks out, like who pops off in that meeting. You know, if we had a meeting, by the way, at CBS Sports Radio, where all of a sudden it was something very contentious happened, and you didn't really want to hear what our bosses had to say, but you knew the meeting was going to be contentious, you bet your ass I'd be at the meeting just to see like who freaked out, who went off, and how that all did go down. So I don't understand how Tommy Fleetwood just skipped the meeting today. Take a break. Coming on back, talking Nuggets and Heat in the NBA Finals next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll get back to all the craziness from the world of golf today in just a moment. But first, let's chat some NBA Finals as we move closer and closer to Game 3 of the NBA Finals coming up tomorrow evening. And right now, joining us on the show is a Nuggets reporter and analyst for Altitude Sports. And that, of course, is Chris Dempsey. Chris, appreciate the time. How are you?
Oh, doing fantastic. How are you? Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much. So Mike Malone, after the game, really stood out to me. I know back in that Western Conference final series against the Lakers, he questioned the team's effort in the middle of what I think was game number two, and they quickly turned it around and ended up winning that game, obviously, in a sweep. But the other night after game two, he crushed his team. What did you make of the Nuggets' effort, and do you think it's just a little bit more of coming out of the gate with a little bit more intensity?
Yeah, I just think that when you're playing the Miami Heat, your effort level has to be, if maximum is 10, then you probably need to be on a 12 because that's you know, that's how that basketball team plays, and you know they don't call it Heat culture for by mistake, and so you have to meet them at that energy and intensity level. The Nuggets did not do that, and you know he called it basically regular season energy, and you can't bring that in the playoffs, obviously the NBA Finals. So he's done that before, I'd say about a handful of times during the course of the season, really called them out for lack of energy in a game. So there's a piece of this team that probably is used to that from time to time, but he definitely wasn't wrong, and I would expect that the Nuggets come out with a much more energized and intense effort tomorrow night.
And also in the aftermath of Game 2, Eric Spoelstra wasn't happy with Ramona Shelburne, who said that is the goal, to kind of just let Jokic get his from a scoring standpoint and take away the passing and take away the other guys as well. And I said something very similar, so maybe I have an untrained eye here, Chris Dempsey, because that's how I thought is the best way to play Nikola Jokic. You see Joker on a night-in and night-out basis. I know there's no easy way to play him, but is that a good strategy if, in fact, that was the strategy by the Heat?
I think it's interesting. I think it's a little bit of both was happening, because you definitely want to take away Nikola Jokic's ability to be a playmaker, because if he's scoring 30 points and he's got 14 assists, then you're really in trouble. And so you can't let him get the daily double like that. So you definitely want to cut down. You want to make sure there's no cutters. You want to make sure that you're on the three-point shooters in the corners, all these places where he likes to get the majority of his assists. But I also don't think that you just want him to score 40 points. You know, so I think if you can kind of hold him down in the high 20s and his assists down, that's probably the sweet spot. But if you had to choose one of the two, I mean, the playoffs right here are telling you that when he scores a bunch of points and doesn't get the assist, the Nuggets lose. So I think Eric Spoelstra was right. Like, he didn't think of it exactly like that, but certainly you want to take away the playmaking piece, which then makes a game look like, hey, if he scores, fine, but if he doesn't do this other thing, and that's the actual strategy, when I think it was a little blend of both.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I didn't have a problem with the question. Like I said, it was something that I've said as well. But I think from Spoelstra's side of it, it was, oh, you're just making it out to be so easy. Like, it's so easy to prevent everyone else from getting theirs and stopping Nikola Jokic from passing, where maybe he just didn't want to be disrespectful to Nikola Jokic in that regard because of how great of a player he is.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that's what's coming out of Eric Spoelstra, because he has such respect for what Nikola Jokic can do on the court. Then he's not going to say, he's not going to allow the narrative to be, well, it's an easy cover, it's an easy solution to make sure that to neutralize him and then thus neutralize the Nuggets, because he doesn't believe that in his core. And so I think you're right about that. It was more of out of respect for Nikola than it really was out of spite for Ramona, but he probably wishes like he had that answer back just a little bit.
When you look at the Denver Nuggets fan confidence right now after what transpired in Game 2, do they still feel like they're going to be okay and win this series? I have to imagine, with how Game 2 was playing on out, the fact that they still had a chance to send that game to overtime, it's like, okay, even when Miami beats us, there was still a path to go win that game.
Yeah, you know what? We had to remind a lot of people of that, you know, because there was a little, I wouldn't say it was full-blown panic, but after game one, everybody thought, oh, this would be fine. We got this. And then after game two, there's a little bit more of, oh, right, but they're also a really good team. So, this is going to be a series. And then you start slicing and dicing what the Nuggets were or were not doing. But to your point, you know, you tend to forget sometimes that as average as the Nuggets played that game, Jamal Murray had a chance to tie that game with a buzzer-beating shot. So, you know, I think Nuggets fans are a little cautious to that now. I think it snapped them back into a little bit of a reality about, okay, this is a real series, and you got to beat a team. But still, there's a confidence in the city that their team will get it done.
We've seen Nikola Jokic in this series play great. We've seen Bam Adebayo play great. The other two stars, Jimmy Butler and Jamal Murray, neither have had a great game in this series. What do you look for in game number three when it pertains to Jimmy buckets and also Jamal Murray?
Yeah, it was one of the really good adjustments that the Heat made, getting Jimmy Butler on Jamal Murray. And really, it wasn't that Jamal Murray's shooting percentage was super low, because it wasn't. But his touches were greatly reduced. His usage was greatly reduced. And so, look, the Nuggets have, the Nuggets have figured this out, have had teams play them like this before. And so all they'll do is get Jamal Murray off the ball a little bit more and then get him back on the ball after they get the ball into the front court in their offensive end and let him operate that way. So I'm sure the adjustments for the Nuggets in that respect will be, I'm not going to say self-explanatory, but they've been down this road before is the best way I'll put it. And so I think that they'll get Jamal Murray a lot more touches in areas of the court that he can really be successful at. So I would expect that his, 15 shots, I think 15 will turn into somewhere between 20, 22 shots in game three. And then it'll be on him to make those shots and make sure he's taking good ones. And if that's the case, then I would expect that he'll have a decent game.
And we know Aaron Gordon was great in game one. Game number two, he was fine. But Michael Porter Jr. and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope just also have not shown up yet in this series. I just feel like, hey, you look at game one to game two for Miami. Miami missed their shots in game one. And then in game two, you had their guys like Duncan Robinson and Gabe Vincent and Max Drews show up. I got to feel it's going to be inevitable that in one of these games in Miami that you see Jamal Murray hitting those threes, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Michael Porter Jr. as well.
Yeah, and I tell you what, the player that's most concerning is Michael Porter Jr. because he has 3-for-17 from the three-point line in the first two games. And, you know, somebody asked me on my own radio show this afternoon, does he have any other instances this season of stretches like this? And the answer is yes. There were like 3 or 4 during the regular season where it was, you know, 4-for-19 or 5-for-20 over a 3-4-5 game span. So there is precedent here for him to maybe live in that space even a game or two longer. But for him, I just think the key is the ratio of three-point shooting to overall field goals will then just have to change, because of the 24 shots total he's taken, 17 have been from the three-point line. And that just can't be the case if you're going to shoot as low a percentage as he is shooting from the three-point line. In game one, he was able to get himself on the offensive glass. He was able to attack some closeouts and finish at the rim. He was able to get himself to the free throw line, ended up with 14 points anyway and 13 rebounds. And if he's not going to make the three-point shot with regularity, then he can still do those things. And I think he has to exist in that space and get himself back to that space and maybe even start there and then build back out to the three-point line rather than shoot the three first and then try to figure it out second.
Last thing I'll ask you, Chris Dempsey, I know you want this series to be 3-1 going back to Denver, but it feels like it's going to be 2-2 now after game two. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, look, Miami, and it's not that they've been world beaters at home, because they have not been, they have hit on some things that I think are repeatable for them to be able to see them through in at least one of those two games in Miami. I don't know what else new and different they can do to keep the Nuggets off balance, but Eric Spoelstra is one of the smartest, if not the smartest coach in the NBA, so he'll get that sorted out. But if they're allowed to shoot threes and make threes like that, then the Nuggets are going to be in for a real fight. And I would expect that one of the two games they'd at least be on like that from the three-point line and probably are able to push this thing back to Denver, game five, tied at 2.
This may be a dumb question because I have some family members that live in Centennial. Have you been to Little Man Ice Cream?
Yeah, I have been to Little Man Ice Cream. It's so very popular. Like if you,
the line is crazy. I was just there 2 weeks ago. I was waiting in line for 30 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, good. You know, I was going to say the lines are so long at Little Man Ice Cream, but it's definitely worth it. So, yeah, I'd wait in that line for sure.
What's your favorite flavor? I know everyone likes that salted cookies and cream, but what's your favorite flavor?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm a very simple guy. you give me a mint chocolate chip or just give me a chocolate, and I'm good to go.
Gotcha. I tried that banana pudding flavor last time. It was pretty damn good as well. Chris Dempsey does a great job. Nuggets reporter and analyst for Altitude Sports. Appreciate you joining us for a few moments.
All right, appreciate you. Thank you.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
So I was reading this via Legion Hoops that The Breakfast Club with, of course, Charlamagne tha God and DJ Envy. This is where this came from, that Ja Morant's camp claims the gun in the recent Instagram Live video that we all just recently saw was a toy gun. That's what Ja Morant's camp, they've had all this time. How are they going to explain what Ja Morant was doing? And once again, if you're going about carrying a gun in a legal way, no problem. But if you are taking that gun, and even if it's in a legal way, and you're twirling it around in a car while you're driving, as I said to Brevin Knight yesterday, I'll say it again, what good do you expect to come out of that? And what are you trying to do? But Hickey, if this is accurate, that it was a toy gun, which my first remark, and Hickey just looked at me, are you the biggest moron on the planet? He just rolled his eyes at me. I said, if this is true that it's a toy gun, it's almost worse, because what are you doing when you are a big-time millionaire, and what are you trying to be? Like, what are you trying to prove if you're riding around with the toy gun? Like, that almost makes it worse. But come on, this is almost, oh, the dog ate my homework. If that's the best excuse that you could come up with, oh, well, he was just trying to be something. It wasn't Adam Silver. It wasn't actually a gun. But with what happened the last time, it was a toy gun. So maybe there is some progress that's being made there, because he's not twirling around an actual gun. It's just a toy gun. That makes him even more of a moron, I feel like, Hickey, if that's true.
I mean, they've had a month. They have had a month since this IG Live was posted.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to claim.
It was a toy gun.
It was a toy gun.
The dog ate my homework.
Wouldn't you think if it actually was a toy gun, you would have come right out as the heat is coming on you and said, hey, it's not real.
Yep.
It's a squirt gun. It's a water gun. It's whatever.
Yeah.
You would think you would say that. And there's also did not help when Adam Silver comes out and says, yeah, we saw some stuff. We investigated. We found even more, I don't say dirt, but we found more information. And the punishment is going to be so severe that we're going to wait till the finals are over.
Remember when Fernando Tatis talked about his performance-enhancing drug use, and he was blaming the barber because he had ringworm from the barber's clippers that weren't clean, and he had to take a steroid for it to go away. And we were saying last summer, this was last summer, we go, okay, that's what you come up with. This is even worse.
Well, at least that was somewhat, he had a whole backstory. He was creative.
A toy gun?
That's pathetic.
Is Ja Morant 23 or like 3? What 23-year-old is playing with a toy gun? Like, you 13, okay. You're playing with a toy gun. I understand that. He's 23 years old. It's not even believable.
If it's a summertime, you're in the backyard, little super soaker, okay, fine. We're having a little fun. But, I mean, come on.
And you're twirling around the toy gun, which, by the way, the biggest giveaway is his friend that is driving in the car with him, that is filming the Instagram Live. The moment he sees what is allegedly, because you got to say that, the actual gun, he drops the phone. If it was a toy gun, don't you think Ja Morant would have been like, gotcha, or something? And they would have picked back up the phone, and the friends would have laughed right after that. Remember, this was on Instagram Live. Like, if we were driving around, Hickey, let's say we were going on a trip somewhere, and you were filming me, and I pulled out what you thought was a gun, and you dropped the phone. Oh, we shouldn't put that out there on social media. And then I go, it's a toy gun. Yeah, you got to eventually tell everyone in the car it's a toy gun. Maybe you share a laugh or something along those lines. But that would have been already put out there, not several weeks later. Oh, Ja was just using a toy gun, everybody.
I don't think I'd also be laughing. I'd be like, that's kind of weird. Like, what are you doing? I know what you're saying, but it's like, I think the first reaction is just like, what are you doing?
Hey, what are you, 13?
Like, right, like, what do you have to gain from this? Congrats. Yeah. You boom roasted. You got me?
Ja Morant is clearly trying to be someone he's not. And that has been talked about a lot before, right? You've had former NBA players coming out and say, I know people that John Morant's like trying to be, or I've come from that lifestyle. John Morant, that's not you. And that's why some players even more irate about this, because he's trying to be someone that he's not. But if you're carrying around a toy gun, which we all know it's not a toy gun, it's like, what the heck are you doing? How dumb are you? Especially with what happened when you had an actual gun. Now, here's my question. From that first incident that goes back to Denver, the first video where what, he was in the strip club and he had the gun and all that, are they claiming that's a toy gun as well? Or is this only the gun in the toy gun in the second video?
I believe you can only use the toy gun excuse one time. So they just used it on the... So they saved it for after the first one. They said, we're going to need this probably later on. And they used it for the second instance now. So that's when they use kind of their one-time, cash-it-in, get-out-of-jail-free card, if you will, of the toy gun excuse.
Now, you talked about what Adam Silver said right before the start of the NBA Finals, which, correct me if I'm wrong, if you had a brain, if I'll translate what Adam Silver basically said... We've concluded our investigation. We know everything that has transpired. I still don't know what the new information was that did come out, but there is some extra and additional information. That was Adam Silver setting the stage for a big suspension for Ja Morant, a significant suspension for Ja Morant. And he just didn't want that to overtake the NBA Finals. I think you have multiple stories now with just the way that we consume media. It's not like one story dominates the entire news cycle, but with how many days in between there are from games, if you give Ja Morant, let's say, a 40-something game suspension, or you suspend him for an entire season, that's going to be a lot of the filler conversation from game to game of these NBA Finals. But I anticipate, I don't know. Do you think it's going to be a season? I kind of feel like it's going to be a half season here, but it wouldn't shock me if it was a season.
I think it should be a season. I don't think Adam Silver will go that extreme, but I do think it definitely should be bare minimum, like more than half. I would do a full season if it's me. But
well, I think regardless, I know that there's been some conflicting reports on this, and they've given you the indication that they won't. But I got to think still, you're going to have the Players Association fight this.
Possibly, yeah. I interpreted what Adam Silver was talking on at this point, last Thursday?
Yeah.
That he was almost working in concert with the NBPA, where they were kind of all on the same page. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Well, obviously, we'll see when the punishment's handed out and what actions are next.
You're right on that.
But he kind of made it seem like he was working hand in hand with them to kind of get to a number that won't be fought or knocked down.
You're right on that. But what I think you're forgetting about here, what's the reaction going to be from the players? And I think a lot of players right now are like, okay, what John Morant's doing is stupid, but if it comes out that he's out for a half a season or a full game, I think you'll have a lot of players saying kind of what J.J. Redick said, well, he didn't do anything illegal, and then they're going to expect their union to fight for the players. That's just what I would anticipate. Now, anyway, the other part of this tweet, quote, Adam Silver is still going to go through with the suspension, looking like it should be 30 games, even though the NBA knows it was a toy gun, close quotes. So the Ja Morant camp is not only claiming that Ja Morant in the second incident from this was using a toy gun, but whoever said this also claims that the NBA knows for a fact that it was a toy gun. Now, if that's the case, it does make Adam Silver look pretty bad for what he said a week ago, if we're talking about a toy gun here, which we're not, but you got to play both sides of this.
So I did not listen to the interview. Was it an interview or was it like this information passed along and the host was just passing along what they heard?
That I don't know. I have not heard the context of that. I'm just reading to you what was posted from it, from an article.
Because I'm just more laughing at myself when you're citing like the Ja Morant camp. Yeah. Like, let's go to the phone. On the line is the Ja Morant camp. They won't put a name on who I'm talking to, but trust us, they're in the inner circle. That's also a little bit like no one wants to put a name on these. I don't say like the facts that they're or the information they're putting out there claiming to be as facts.
I could be wrong here, but I'm going to assume that someone in the Ja Morant camp contacted the Breakfast Club and said, this is what we're going to tell you. This is what we're claiming. You then, it's a talk show. You go and put it out there.
Right.
For example,
discuss.
When the Aaron Rodgers, totally different conversation, but when there was stuff out there about Aaron Rodgers to start this offseason, I had someone in the know, someone that if Aaron, Mark Murphy, Gutekunst, and also Matt LaFleur, if I would have told them, the person that told me that Aaron Rodgers was intentionally blowing off Matt LaFleur in meetings when they were trying to give Aaron Rodgers more input in the game plan. Like, if I would have told them who that person was, they all four of them would agree, oh, yeah, that person knows the truth about everything that went on between the four of those guys. That wasn't someone calling into the show and telling me. It was just someone calling me off the air and informing me this is what was going on. And that person was 100% right. I would imagine here, just going out on a limb, that's what happened here. Someone contacted a producer or one of the hosts of the Breakfast Club, and they explained who they were, right? You verified all that stuff that you have to go through before you're going to say something on the air like that and not just do it recklessly, I would imagine. And it was someone in the John Morant's camp. Because if we knew the person's name, then you could say so-and-so who was associated with John Morant ended up saying that. But that is what the John Morant camp is claiming. That the gun in the recent Instagram Live video was a toy gun. So that's two things today, Hickey, that I thought that I read that was fake, that ended up not being so. The first one was this PGA, LIV Golf, DP World Tour merger, and then it was the John Morant camp claiming that it was a toy gun. Ay, ay, ay. Coming on back, Zach Gilbert, CBS Sports Radio.